Mental Hygiene, Ellen G. White. Those who engage in this work should be consecrated to God, and not only have the object before them to treat the body merely to cure disease, thus working from the popular physician's standpoint, but to be spiritual fathers, to administer to minds diseased, and point the sin-sick soul to the never-failing remedy, the Savior who died for them. Those who are reduced by disease are sufferers in more than one sense. They can endure bodily pain far better than they can bear mental suffering. Many bear a violated conscience and can be reached only by the principles of Bible religion. When the poor, suffering paralytic was brought to the Savior, the urgency of the case seemed to admit of not a moment's delay, for already dissolution was doing its work upon the body. Those who bore him upon his bed, when they saw that they could not come directly into the presence of Christ, at once tore open the roof and let down the bed whereon the sick of the palsy lay. Our Savior saw and understood his condition perfectly. He also knew that this wretched man had a sickness of the soul, far more aggravating than bodily suffering. He knew the greatest burden he had borne for months was on account of sins. The crowd of people were waiting with almost breathless silence to see how Christ would treat this case, apparently so hopeless. They were all astonished to hear the words which fell from his lips. "Son, be of good cheer. Thy sins be forgiven thee." These were the most precious words that could fall upon the ear of that sick sufferer. For the burden of sin had lain so heavily upon him that he could not find the least relief. Christ lifts the burden that so heavily oppressed him. "Be of good cheer. I, your Savior, came to forgive sins." How quickly the pallid countenance of the sufferer changes. Hope takes the place of dark despair, and peace and joy take the place of distressing doubt and stolid gloom. The mind being restored to peace and happiness, the suffering body can now be reached. Next comes from the divine lips, "Thy sins be forgiven thee. Arise and walk." Those lifeless, bloodless arms, in the effort to obey the will, were quickened. The healthful current of blood flowed through the veins, the leaden color of his flesh disappeared, and the ruddy glow of health took its place. The limbs, that for long years had refused to obey the will, were now quickened to life, and the healed paralytic grasps his bed and walks through the crowd to his home, glorifying God. This case is for our instruction. Physicians who would be successful in the treatment of disease should know how to administer to a mind diseased. They can have a powerful influence for good if they make God their trust. Some invalids need first to be relieved of pain before the mind can be reached. After this relief to the body has come, the physician can frequently the more successfully appeal to the conscience. Patients should be treated with the greatest sympathy and tenderness. And yet the physicians should be firm and not allow themselves, in their treatment of the sick, to be dictated by patients. Firmness on the part of the physicians is necessary for the good of the patients. But firmness should be mingled with respectful courtesy. No physician or attendant should contend with a patient or use harsh, irritating words, or even words not the most kindly, however provoking the patient may be. One object of our health institute is to direct sin-sick souls to the great physician, the true healing fountain, and arouse their attention to the necessity of reform from a religious standpoint, that they no longer violate the law of God by sinful indulgences. If the moral sensibilities of invalids can be aroused, and they see that they are sinning against their Creator by bringing sickness upon themselves by the indulgence of appetite and debasing passions, when they leave the health institute, They will not leave their principles behind, but take them with them and be genuine health reformers at home. If the moral sensibilities are aroused, patients will have a determination to carry out their convictions of conscience. They will have true, noble independence to practice the truths to which they assent. If the mind is at peace with God, the bodily conditions will be more favorable.
The religion of the Bible is not detrimental to the health of the body or of the mind. The influence of the Spirit of God is the very best medicine that can be received by a sick man or woman. Heaven is all health, and the more deeply the heavenly influences are realized, the more sure will be the recovery of the believing invalid. At some health institutions, amusements, plays, and dancing are recommended by the physicians to get up an excitement to keep the patients from becoming gloomy while they express many fears for the result of religious interest. Their theory in this respect is not only erroneous, but dangerous. Yet they talk this in such a manner that patients would be led to think that their recovery depended upon their having as few thoughts of God and heaven as possible.
It is true that there are persons with ill-balanced minds who imagine themselves to be very religious, who impose upon themselves fasting and prayer to the injury of their health. These souls suffer themselves to be deceived. God has not required this of them. They have a Pharisaical righteousness which springs not from Christ, but from themselves. They trust to their own good works for salvation, and are seeking to buy heaven by meritorious works of their own, instead of relying, as every sinner should, alone upon the merits of a crucified and risen Savior. Christ and true godliness, today and forever, will be health to the body and strength to the soul. Hygienic physicians should be men and women of faith and spirituality. They should make God their trust. There are many who have, by their own sinful indulgence, brought upon themselves disease of almost every type. This class do not deserve the sympathy that they frequently require, and it is painful to the physicians to devote time and strength to this class who are debased physically, mentally, and morally. But there is a class who have, through ignorance, lived in violation of nature's laws. They have worked intemperately and have eaten intemperately because it was the custom so to do. Some have suffered many things from many physicians, but have not been made better, but decidedly worse. At length they are torn from business, from society, and their families, and, as their last resort, go to a health institution with some faint hope that they may find relief. This class needs sympathy. They should be treated with the greatest tenderness, and care should be taken to make clear to their understanding the laws of their being, that they may govern themselves and avoid violating them, and thereby avoid suffering and disease, which is the penalty of nature's violated law. Ellen G. White.